Hey, this is Jeremy. Just wanted to hop on before the episode started with a few announcements. We really want to hear from you, and perhaps the best way to do that, we actually have a subreddit now. It's just r/polyphonicpress, and I'll leave a link to it in the show notes. But it's always been my dream to have a community where we can all get together and talk about the albums that we review and just music in general. So if you want to join the community and start the community, really, because it's quite small right now, it's just r/polyphonicpress. And you can always help out the show in various ways. You can check out our Patreon and get these episodes the day before that they go live, and leave a rating and a review on Apple Music or Spotify or wherever you're listening. Those are great ways to get in touch with us as well. That's it. I just wanted to say that. And now on to the episode. Thank you.
This is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is The Police, Outlandos d'Amour.
Oh, cool.
Okay. I think this is their I'm pretty sure this is their debut album.
Interesting. It's not one that comes up that often.
No, everybody always goes to, like, Synchronicity is the big album that they put out.
But I think there's been a couple hits off this one.
Yeah. Okay, so this is what it says on allmusic.com. While their subsequent chart-topping albums would contain far more ambitious songwriting and musicianship, The Police's 1978 debut album, Outlandos d'Amour, translation, Outlaws of Love, is by far their most direct and straightforward release. Although Sting, Andy Summers, and Stuart Copeland were all superb instrumentalists with jazz backgrounds, it was much easier to get a record contract in late 70s England if you were a punk/new wave artist. So the band decided to mask their instrumental prowess with a set of strong, adrenaline-charged rock, albeit with a reggae tinge. Some of it may have been simplistic, Be My Girl, Sally, and Born in the 50s, but Sting was already an ace songwriter, as evidenced by all-time classics like Good Girl Gone Bad Tale of The Good Girl Gone Bad Tale of Roxanne, and a pair of broken-hearted reggae rock ditties, Can't Stand Losing You and So Lonely. But like all other Police albums, the lesser-known album cuts are often highlights themselves. The frenzied rockers Next to You, Peanuts, and Truth Hits Everybody, as well as more exotic fare like the groovy album closer Masako Tanga and the lonesome Hole in My Life. Outlandos d'Amour is unquestionably one of the finest debuts to come out of the 70s punk/new wave movement.
Sounds like it's going to be a bit of a riot, so that sounds all right.
All right, so here we go. The album starts off with the song Next to You, so here we go. All right, so ending side one with Peanuts.
And those horn sounds.
And a horn sound. I think it might be, I don't know what if it's a horn, if it's a saxophone, or if it's one of those, I think what the thing with the, you blow into the tube and it's got a keyboard on it.
Yeah, I don't think it's one of those, which is a melodica.
Melodica, yeah. Those. Oh, okay.
I was wondering if it might have been some sort of like early synthesizer thing, because they sound like that sometimes.
Yeah, probably.
I was really wondering, but yeah, it could have been a saxophone.
Yeah. Yeah, this, I'm actually familiar. I actually have this album on CD, and I'm pretty, you know, I've listened to it a few times, and, yeah, it's bringing back a lot of, like I'm sort of remembering what this album actually has on it. Lots of energy, and it is very punk, but it's
the Police's version. Yeah, it's not particularly hard, although I did notice that Andy Summers is playing a lot more punk-ish on this. Although that slide guitar solo on the first track next to you is pretty sweet.
I was actually just reading on Wikipedia, and there was their critical reception at the time. So Rolling Stone actually panned the album and said Tom Carson of Rolling Stone had high praise for the band's technical abilities, but was disparaging of their attempt to tackle sophisticated rock and reggae while posturing as punks. He also perceived a lack of emotional conviction on the album, especially in Sting's vocals, which is weird. You know, it's like he's complaining that they're too good of musicians to be punk.
I think that was not an uncommon gripe from some people at the time. I mean, from punks and everything like that. If you were too good, you were too good of a musician to be punk. and from everybody who wasn't punk, is just like, well, these guys are too good of musicians to be punk.
Exactly. But it's sort of like it's like not punk to be, or it is punk to be bad at your instrument,
or to be just barely capable, you know, enough to get notes across, a tune across.
I can't remember. This was years ago that I heard this, but it was an interview with Stuart Copeland, the drummer for the Police, and he was talking about how they were touring with, I think it was the Clash, and it was either, it might have been Joe Strummer or I can't remember the other guitar player in the Clash's name. But anyway, he was taught like sort of secretly in the corner, pulled Andy Summers aside and was trying to get him to show him some things on the guitar. Like he was like secretly trying to improve his guitar playing.
It sounds like something maybe Joe Strummer would have done, because he actually had like respect for musicians and whatnot. Yeah. So, but it could have been, yeah, the Clash were a little bit, they were as punk as they were. They had a lot more respect for like the sophistication of some other like musical genres and stuff like that. Whereas like the Sex Pistols were, well, actually they did too, but they just weren't open about it.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I remember, was that, Jonesy, he has a, I don't know if you've heard his radio show or clips of it on YouTube.
No,
but he, Steve Jones is his name. And he's the guitar player for, Sex Pistols, and he has a radio show where he interviews a whole bunch of musicians, and he was interviewing Steve Perry, the singer from Journey, and he was saying like when they were touring around, he had to hide his Journey albums because he was like he was into it, but he couldn't show that he was like into like this sort of soft, you know, sort of semi progressive rock.
Like everybody was like, if you were a punk, like your big enemy was supposed to be like Pink Floyd, but how many punks actually had like Dark Side of the Moon at home? Cause good music is just good music.
Right. I mean, yeah. You know, and you know, the punk bands, like by the late 70s, they're like into their 20s. So they grew up with all the you know, psychedelic and progressive rock and all that stuff.
Well, actually, I was just gonna mention that Andy Summers and I think Stuart Copeland were actually in some of those psychedelic bands back in the late 60s.
Stuart Copeland was a drummer for a progressive rock band called Curved Air.
Yeah, Curved Air, that's right. And I'm trying to think, I can't remember the band, but Andy Summers was in one too. I'm just trying to remember his name, the band's name.
Well, he's been in a few bands. He's been in The Police, obviously, Dandelion's Chariot.
Dandelion's Chariot, that's the one I was trying to think of. But what are the other ones?
The other one is Soft Machine.
Oh, was he in the Soft Machine for a little bit?
I know I've heard Stuart Copeland talk about how, they had to, like, sort of cover up. They could have had to hide their past and sort of not let on that they knew all these jazz chords and stuff like that.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
And if you're in the Soft Machine, you used a lot of jazz chords.
Yeah.
So.
But this album, I mean, the production on this album, I noticed, is very dry, and which is very, like, different from the following releases from The Police, because at least, especially on the drums, you hear a lot of reverb, and Stuart Copeland tuned his snare drum up really high, but this one is sort of, you know, in the middle. So it's like a sort of a typical 70s production, but then I think on the next album they sort of said, okay, we want to do something.
He got that 80s polished thing
unique
going,
yeah. So it's interesting to hear that sort of.
Yeah, Andy Summers is also like one of the pioneers of that the chorus on his guitar, which not everybody's a big fan of. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of it. I think it has its place. It works in some places. I find... I think it was... What was the song? Hole in My Life. I thought that was kind of interesting. Actually, I think that was a phaser he was using on that. But that was a really interesting... I thought the time signature was really bizarre in that one, too, which I like. I like weird.
Yeah, it was different. They were showing their... getting a little bit of progressive rock in there.
Yeah, well, I mean, the fact that they're throwing, I think they kind of decided to do almost like the reggae thing specifically because I think they would have gotten too bored doing the standard, like, 1-4-5 punk sort of other thing. So they kept it interesting by, well, let's do like a reggae thing because, you know, the reggae scene was, you know, pretty popular, and you had ska bands starting up around the same time, and so they decided, well, if we go in that direction, we can keep ourselves a little more amused.
Yeah, it's actually interesting because I did see an interview with Stuart Copeland, and someone asked him, like, what reggae music do you like? Or, you know, what were the reggae artists that influenced you? And he said, actually, there weren't any. It was where that style of my drumming came from, really was from, like, his dad was in the CIA, and he grew up in Lebanon. And so the influences, I guess the rhythm in Lebanese music is very similar to reggae, so that's sort of where he sort of learned that rhythm. So it just happens to be a coincidence that it sounds a lot like reggae.
Yeah, well, especially when you got Stuart Copeland going bank 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 next to it. So yeah, I mean, it really does get that not necessarily a ska, but definitely a reggae feel to it.
Yeah, it's very cool. I would put The Police as one of my favorite bands. I mean, they're just, you know, as far as musicianship goes, anyway.
Oh, yeah, they're wonderful musicians, and I really do like Stuart Copeland's drumming, because I think he's a brilliant drummer. They all are actually really brilliant at their instruments. Sting's a great bass player, and people don't talk about how great of a bass player he is, but he's a great bass player.
Yeah, I was listening to, and it's like, oh, wow, yeah. He's actually doing some interesting stuff. And I can't remember what song it was. It might have been So Lonely, but it's like he was leaving some space. Like, he was just playing very sparsely and leaving some space, and which is really cool. It really kind of... That's how you groove on a bass, is you don't play every eighth note. You know, you leave some space in there. So
yeah, you gotta have you got to have something to convey a rhythm. I mean, you got notes to convey a rhythm, but how the notes interplay with the space is how what creates a rhythm. So you can be pretty funky. If, like, I mean, Victor Wooten can be pretty funky and not leave a whole lot of space, but he doesn't do that all the time, too. So he needs to establish a groove, too, and then he can play along with the groove that it's kind of already been established, fill in the space for, like, as his solo sort of a thing, and then, but still, that basic groove is established with some space.
Yeah, no, it's, I'm fascinated by bass players, and they don't get enough credit.
No, not really.
Anyway, we'll move on to the second side of the album, and it starts with the song Can't Stand Losing You. So, here we go. All right, ending the album with Masoko Tanga. So there's a jam, I guess, a loose jam, I guess.
Yeah, which is probably the most unpunk thing they've done here.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, oddly enough, I could hear a bit of the Clash influence in that one. Thought that was sort of interesting. Just that basic rhythm kind of goes along. Like, and I think I sort of alluded to this, like the Clash were a little bit more open with their musical influences. They may not have said so, but they wore them in their music a lot more openly. They weren't afraid to be a little more experimental than, say, a lot of the punk bands were at the time.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, there's, if you listen to a Clash album, there's, you know, a whole bunch of genres that they're borrowing from and, you know, taking from, and whether it's rock or blues or, you know, R&B, Motown, you know, there's a lot of stuff that they're just...
Whether they're covering a tune or just, like, throwing, you know, a bass line in here that's clearly very Motown or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. That was a bit of a tangent, though, but that's all right. I mean, we're talking about the Police here.
Yes. yeah, no, the second half the album as a whole, I mean, this is, I don't know, it's hard to pick a favorite Police album, but this is definitely up there. I think it's cool to hear them, you know, at their beginning, you know, and sort of hear them when they were just starting out and to see where they would, you know, progress to. Yeah, this is a really interesting album. You know, and it's weird, like the song Truth Hits Everybody. I can see, maybe it's the chord progression and the whoa that line, and then the melody and the playing on it and everything. I can hear like maybe like Green Day or Blink 182 doing that song, like a very pop punk kind of thing, like a skater punk kind of thing.
It's funny because I was sort of going in the other direction, but I could hear like it sounded to me like Nas song to me in some ways. Maybe it was partly the bell in there, but Forget All About It. That song's, it sounds a bit like that one to me.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, that's okay. So that's kind of cool, actually, that, you know, because it's, I guess it's just kind of right in the middle there then, you know, the, and on either side is maybe, you know, what it was influenced by and then what it influenced after, you know? So that's kind of cool. Yeah. And then Be My Girl, Sally, that was the poem about the blow up doll. That was pretty funny. And yeah, I was listening to I was more listening to the lyrics of Born in the 50s, talking about, and it's sort of like a precursor to that Billy Joel song, We Didn't Start the Fire, of sort of just talking about, you know, someone who's born like in the 40s and 50s and just like the 20th century, just, or the mid 20th century, all the changes that happened and all how crazy it all was and everything. So that, I thought that was really interesting. And said, and sort of them saying, okay, this is what we've been through. This is who we are. This is what we've seen. This is what it was like when we were growing up. And now here we are. So I thought that was cool. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed this album. I mean, the Police are one of my favorite bands, and you know, it's cool to hear, like, we didn't really talk about, because everybody knows about it, but like Roxanne, I mean, that's been a radio song pretty much since it came out. And I just think, like, how, I wonder what it must have been like. Like, this stuff, like, the punk and new wave was just starting to happen, and how, like, I've never really experienced a musical shift, you know? Like, the last big musical shift really was going from, like, the hair metal of the 80s into the grunge era. And there was a bit of a shift in the early 2000s with the sort of the garage rock revival bands.
Yeah, but it wasn't as huge of a shift. It was a movement, but it wasn't too much of a shift. It was played on rock radio alongside, you know, Nickelback and whatnot. And it sort of slowly transformed into like indie rock and stuff like that. There's a bit of a crossover in there. There's some indie rock bands that sound kind of garagey, and there were some garagey bands that kind of sounded very indie.
Yeah. So I'm just like wondering what it must have been like going from like these long, like progressive rock, like 7, 8, 9 minute songs, you know, albums where, like, it's one song per side, but it's really broken up into chunks, and all these concept albums. What it must have been like to go from that to all of a sudden hearing short, like, punchy rock and roll with, you know, 3 minutes and, you know, three chords, you know.
It really depends on who you are. I think some people were, you know, relieved, and other people were let down. It was like the music used to be so intricate and now it's not, whereas other people were like, oh my god, finally some real rock and roll again. So it just really depends on the kind of person you are. But yeah, to actually be around when that sort of a musical shift happened,
to bring it back to this album, it's really smart of the Police to, or the guys in the Police to really to recognize that, hey, there's this new musical shift that's happening. You know, the stuff that have been playing is probably not going to be around for much longer. We better get on this new musical thing if we really want to, you know, make a career out of this. So, you know, I mean, they were smart to do that. But yeah, this album, I mean, I don't think there's really a song that I didn't like on here.
Yeah, overall, I think it's a pretty good album. This is I can see where some people would have criticized it for not being as like intricate as some of their other albums and stuff like that. But again, this is probably their punk new wave sort of introduced. This is more punk, I think, whereas some of their later stuff could be a little bit more new wave. But again, they did it their own way, because they had all this other stuff.
Yeah, I don't think, other than saying that, I think, like, once this album is very much a conscious thing of saying, okay, we need to sort of be this kind of punk band. But I think after this album and all their other releases, I don't think they were necessarily thinking in those terms of we need to be this kind of thing. They were just writing songs the way they write songs and recording them, and however they ended up sounding is how the band sounds.
they got themselves established, they got themselves a record deal, and then they could do what they wanted to do.
Yeah, and they stayed around for a while, and then they broke up because they fought a lot. I mean, there are stories of them beating each other up, and especially between Sting and Stuart Copeland. But yeah, but anyway, it's cool to hear the beginnings of all of that. So yeah, I guess we will end the show there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. You can check us out on polyphonicpress.com. You can drop us a line there. And if you feel inclined and you want to support the show, you can do that at patreon.com/polyphonicpress. There's lots of cool perks there. You can get early access to these shows and a couple other things there. And yeah, I think that's pretty much it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.